This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Here are Thursday's closing grain futures quotes from the Chicago Board of Trade. December corn, 322 and three quarters, up 1.5. March corn, 335 and three quarters, up 1.75. May corn, 344 and a quarter, up 1.5. November soybeans, 924.5, up 7.75. January soybeans, 933, up 8. March soybeans, 941.5, up 7.75. December wheat, 482 and three quarters, up 3.75. March wheat, 496, up 3.75. May wheat, 504 and three quarters, up 3.5. Now time for your cash grain report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. This is Jerry Milberg with the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Thursday's grain market report. Illinois country grain prices ended higher on Thursday afternoon. Grain prices got a boost from rain slowing harvest in the Midwest. In northern and western Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 3 to 6 cents stronger at 269 to 292. Soybean bids were up 7 to 8 cents at 842 to 896. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 2 cents stronger at 268 to 294. Soybean bids were up 5 to 8 cents at 875 to 914. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were mostly 2 cents higher at 253 to 293. Soybean bids up 4 to 9 cents at 868 to 886. And the wheat bids on Thursday 10 to 14 higher at 307 to 413. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids were 8 to 22 cents higher at 909 to 915. Basis ended steady to 14 cents stronger, ranging from 16 to 10 under November. High Pro 48% soybean meal on a truck basis offered in a range of $3.2870 to $3.5970, which was $1.40 to $3.40 per ton higher, and basis ended unchanged to $2 per ton lower, ranging from 20 to 51 over October. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids 2 cents higher at 285 to 303, with basis steady, ranging from 38 to 20 under December. Illinois river barge loading elevators quoted producer corn bids mixed at 251 to 278. Corn basis also mixed on Thursday, ranging from 72 to 45 under December. Soybeans ended 13 to 15 cents higher at 841 to 892, with basis up 5 to 7 cents, range from 84 to 33 under November. East St. Louis barge loading terminal elevators place our producer corn bids a penny higher at 276 to 277. These same elevators raised their soybean prices by 13 to 15 cents, with quotations at 905 to 909. Soft red winter wheat up 4 cents at 332. To 333. Contract bids to producers for January delivered grain in northern and western Illinois. Country elevator bids to producers in those regions for January delivered corn ranged from 275 up to 315. January soybean bids at 890 up to 933. In central Illinois, Jan corn bids range from 292 to 316. January soybean bids at 901 to 935. And in the southern part of the state, January corn bids range from 306 up to 321, with the January soybean bids ranging from a low of 306 up to 9, I'm sorry, range from 906 to 945. That completes our country grain report for Thursday. This is Jerry Milberg with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And here are Thursday's closing livestock futures quotes from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. October live cattle, 162.85, up 37 cents. December live cattle, 166.42, up 52 cents. February live cattle, 166.27, up 40 cents. October feeder cattle, 241.10, up $2.67. November feeder cattle, 240.07, up $2.02. January feeder cattle, 233.87, up $2.10. October lean hogs, 106.77, down 82 cents. December lean hogs, 94.92, up 5 cents. February lean hogs, 91.95, up 10 cents. Now time for your cash livestock report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. This is Bob Reese with the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Thursday the 2nd's afternoon livestock report. Starting with the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass was 45 cents higher, in the range of 99 to 110, with a weighted average carcass price of 106. From the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter sows were trading steady with moderate demand for moderate offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds are 48 to 55, 4 to 5 weights 51 to 57, 5 to 6 weights 54 to 58, and 600 pounds and up 58 to 60. On the Illinois Direct Hog Trade, barrels and gilts at country buying points were trading steady with moderate demand for moderate offerings, ranging from $70 to $75. Receipts for Illinois hogs today totaled 13,201 head. And now for the report from the Greenville Livestock Auction. They had a light test on slaughter cattle, but a nice run of feeder calves. Starting with the return to the farm calves, Holstein males 70 to 90 pounds were 180 to 280, and weaned Holstein calves 120 to 150 were 310 to 480. Feeder steers, medium and large ones, some six weights brought 204 to 223. Holstein steers, five weights brought 150, and six weights were 151 to 160. Feeder heifers, medium and large ones, five weights were 201 to 236, and six weights were 190 to 217. They also had a nice run of sheep and goats. Starting with the slaughter lambs, wool, choice, twos and threes, 80 weights were 206 to 232, and 90 weights were 200 to 203. Slaughter kids, 75 pounds brought 208, and 90-pounders brought 151. Now from the Real Livestock Auction, they had, starting with the choice slaughter steers, they were 152.50 to 157.50, select and choice 145 to 150, choice or select and choice Holstein steers were 130 to 135, and choice heifers 152.50 to 158. From the National Daily Pork FOB Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts were established with 285 loads traded. Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass, 121.42, and that was 62 cents higher. From the National Box Beef Cutout Report, values for choice and select beef carcasses were higher. Choice carcasses, 238.45, that was 31 cents higher, with select carcasses at 227.33, that was 15 cents higher. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated at 112,000. That compared to 107,000 last week and 122,000 a year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 423,000. That compared to 412,000 last week and 433,000 a year ago. That concludes our livestock report. I'm Bob Reese with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And here are your cash grain bids from Hog Inc. October corn delivered to Greenfield, $2.76. November corn delivered to Greenfield, $2.77. October corn delivered to Scottville, $2.76. November corn delivered to Scottville, $2.77. October beans delivered to Greenfield, $8.75. November beans delivered to Greenfield, $9.01. October beans delivered to Scottville, $8.75. November beans delivered to Scottville, $9.01. October wheat delivered to Scottville, $3.53. Once again, their pre-opening prices are corn at Greenfield and Scottville is $2.76. Beans at Greenfield and Scottville are $8.75, and wheat at Scottville is $3.53. This Saturday, World Dairy Expo will wrap up in Madison, Wisconsin. It's one of the largest expositions of dairy cattle in North America and showcases technologies, associations, and of course, the cattle themselves. Like many areas of agriculture, the dairy industry has changed significantly over the decades, evolving to the point where cows can just walk into a chute to be milked by a robot, a far cry from the stool and bucket of years gone by. Naturally, the cows have also changed with the times. There are six major breeds of dairy cattle: Ayrshire, Brown Swiss, Guernsey, Holstein, Jersey, and milking Shorthorn. While each breed has played an important role in the dairy industry, one breed currently reigns supreme in terms of popularity. The Holstein, making up somewhere around 90% of the cattle in the dairy industry, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. Today, out of the over 4,300,000 dairy cattle enrolled in dairy herd improvement, only about 580,000 of them are colored breeds. That's Jerseys, Guernseys, Ayrshires, Brown Swiss, and Milking Shorthorns altogether. But this wasn't always the case. In 1920, the USDA recorded the Guernsey population at nearly 2 million head, according to a Mother Earth News article called Guernsey Cattle Heritage Livestock Breeds. Until the mid-1900s, the Guernsey cow was considered the most popular of the dairy breeds, according to first vice president of the National Guernsey Cattle Association, Emily Hartman.
The Guernsey breed was probably most popular from the 1940s through the 1960s. In fact, J.C. Penney was one of the most popular owners of Guernseys in the country. He actually is the founder of the J.C. Penney department stores, and he had a group of registered Guernseys that he showed all over the country. But in the 40s, 50s, and 60s was probably the heyday for the Guernsey breed. During that time, there were generally over 10,000 Guernseys registered every year, and that was probably the prime time that we had a lot of Guernseys throughout the country.
The Guernsey cow is quite distinguishable from her black and white Holstein counterparts. They are a fawn and white colored cow, and many breed characteristics helped them rise in popularity on American dairy farms in the 1900s.
They're probably the most efficient breed of all dairy cattle as far as feed conversion ratios. It takes less feed to produce the same pound of milk that it would other breeds of animals. They're very efficient whether they're just grazing primarily, grazing only. You don't have to feed a lot of high concentrated rations to Guernseys. They are extremely efficient. They're also very heat tolerant. So in different parts of the country, whether you're in the deep south or midwest, you can turn them out on pasture and it may be 100 degrees outside, but the Guernseys will still be out grazing in the pasture, where some of the other less heat tolerant breeds will head to the shade or head to the barn in the heat of the day, and you'll still find your Guernseys out there grazing. And so it takes less pounds of feed to produce that same pound of milk when you're feeding Guernseys.
The gentle cow that did well on pasture fit perfectly into the farming system of the time, according to Hartman.
Guernseys are the most docile breed. They're excellent grazers. They're very easy to work with. They have very high solids content in their milk, very high butterfat, very high protein. That was very valuable back in those decades. People really liked having that gentle animal that they could work with. A lot of dairy producers in those days didn't have large herds. There was a lot of hand milking. There wasn't a lot of automation. A lot of grazing was going on. And because of the value in the Guernseys and their milk, high beta casein in their milk as well, people really liked the milk, liked the high fats, high proteins in the milk. But that changed later on, and particularly in the 70s when the low-fat craze came on. People wanted cows that produced large quantities of milk, and the milk qualities weren't as important. And I think that's when we really started seeing a lot of changing. We started seeing herds growing in size, less grazing, a lot more large herds started coming into play. And that's when things started changing for Guernseys.
As times moved on, the Guernsey cow started falling out of favor and was steadily replaced by the Holstein. Chief Executive Officer of the Holstein Association USA, John Meyer, addressed the reason behind this trend.
Well, going back, the Guernsey breed really was the prominent dairy breed. And that cow people really liked. It had a very good marketing campaign. The Golden Guernsey Dairies out of the Midwest, out of Wisconsin, marketed their milk very well. And it was a milk that a lot of people really enjoyed. And then the breed really started kind of falling out of favor as people started recognizing the characteristics of the Holstein breed, the vast quantities of milk that she produces. So what people started finding in the 1960s is that they could feed a cow very similar amounts of inputs and get a lot more milk out of the Holstein cow than they could with any other breed. And so a lot of people started converting to the Holstein cow. I think that with the other thing is that people found out about Holstein cow is that they're rugged. I mean, they're a strong animal. They're a healthy animal. They provide economic milk production, good feeding capacity, and they have a really good ability to withstand tough climate conditions and to thrive without a lot of expensive stabling. Their strength and hardiness is something that was welcomed and still is, because they just tend to not have bad days and seem to wear well in all conditions.
Today, the Holstein is undeniably the most popular breed of dairy cow.
When you look at it, in 2013, there were 4,378,350 cows enrolled in dairy herd improvement, or DHI, testing. Now, the vast majority of them were Holsteins, as 3,709,885 Holsteins in 15,700 Holstein herds were on test. So that's the lion's share of those animals. It's kind of interesting. The second largest breed category, if you will, enrolled in DHIA is the mixed breed or mixed herds category, or crossbreds, where 392,400 head in 19,000 herds were enrolled. Now, the majority of those cows have Holstein blood somewhere in the crossbreeding scheme, if not as their base. But you go then, when you're talking about popularity, you go from 3,709,000 Holstein cows on tests to just 252,822 Jersey cows on test. And then from a herd standpoint, or number of farms, 15,725 dairy farms in the United States that are on test milk Holsteins, where there are just 955 Jersey herds enrolled on DHI test.
The Holstein has adapted well to modern farming practices. As many operations move to indoor systems, Meyer attests the Holstein cow's sturdy feet and legs allow her to thrive indoors.
The feet and legs of the Holstein breed are really notorious for being strong. The cow has tremendous mobility, and so they get along very well in all environments. And I guess a way of saying it a little bit, Angela, would be is that they're not finicky. They get along well with each other, and they get along well with the people that are working with them and that are milking them.
People such as Matt Jardin. The Jardin family has been milking Holstein cattle for a few generations now at their farm near Bunker Hill.
The rumor or the story is that Grandpa traded a horse for two cows sometime back in the 40s, and we've milked cows and grown ever since. From a stanchion barn where my dad grew up milking cows as a child to a double six herringbone that turned into a double 13 parallel to the double 28 that we milk in now.
Currently, the Jardins milk about 900 Holsteins in a double 28 parallel parlor three times a day. Their cows, separated into lactation groups, live in three different freestyle barns. And Jardin supports the statement that Holsteins do well in this system, saying they're easy to work with and seem supremely comfortable in their sand-bedded stalls. Like many modern farms, in order to keep track of each individual cow and make sure she's getting the necessary attention required, the Jardins have equipped their herd with a cow monitoring system.
Well, we extensively use our computer system. We do a lot with our herd management. We've even got an app for our phone that is keeps track of all of our cows, everything at our fingertips. We do have a tablet in our management area that we use to look up breedings and activity on our cows. Records everything about a cow from the time they're born, every vaccination, every shot, every event in that cow's life is recorded. So even our 10-year-old cows, I have everything about, you know, their first birthday party. So things are kept very meticulously to keep things straight.
Again, at the heart of almost every modern farm like the Jardin farm, there is usually the Holstein cow, which has primarily won her fame for the reason, as Matt Jardin succinctly puts it,
"You give the most milk. It's the easy answer."
But the volume of milk produced was not always the key money-making aspect of dairying. When breeds like the Guernsey and Jersey cow were at their peak popularity, pricing of milk was based on its components, explains General Manager of National All Jersey, Eric Metzger.
For a long time, when the primary pricing of milk was based on pounds of butter that milk would produce, the Jerseys were quite popular. The population of the Jerseys at that time was roughly equivalent to a couple of the other major dairy breeds, being Holstein and Guernsey at the time. Then around World War II, the U.S. Army decided they wanted milk for the soldiers that was 3.5% butterfat. And at that time, pricing programs changed to be based off the volume of milk with a butterfat differential plus or minus from that 3.5% base. And at that time, that pricing was not advantageous to Jerseys, and so just as a matter of economics, they started to phase out and decline in popularity.
Although substantially trailing the Holstein cow in numbers, the Jersey cow is the second most popular breed in the U.S. She is a much smaller cow, as the typical Holstein stands about 57 inches at the shoulder and weighs about 14 to 1,500 pounds, while the typical Jersey cow stands about 48 inches at the shoulder and weighs between 900 to 1,000 pounds. Despite her size, Metzger says Jerseys are a feisty cow and are very competitive with their large breed herd mates.
There are numerous reports of Jerseys in mixed herds of cows with other breeds, and people initially are concerned, will the Jerseys get to the feed bunk? And what turns out happening is it's the Jerseys knocking the other cows out of the way so that the Jersey can get to the feed bunk.
But what really sets the Jersey cow apart is her milk.
They have higher milk components. Most Jerseys average in the neighborhood of 4.7% butterfat, 3.6% protein, which as a breed is the highest among the dairy breeds.
And once again, the way milk was priced affected the popularity of a breed.
Move forward into the mid-1970s and into the 1980s, as fluid milk consumption started to decline, but cheese production started to increase, the value of Jersey milk in the cheese-making process was recognized. The higher protein in the Jersey milk meant that a cheese manufacturer who was processing 100 pounds of Jersey milk could probably get 20% more cheese out of it than 100 pounds of average milk. And in order to attract Jersey milk to their plants, cheese manufacturers started paying protein premiums. And eventually the protein premiums expanded to the point where protein pricing became embedded into the regulated milk pricing formulas, and with the advent of multiple component pricing, where producers are paid for not only the volume and the butterfat in their milk, but also the protein in their milk, then Jerseys became more popular.
But there is another reason the Jersey cow is getting some more attention. As the Green Revolution focuses on the dairy industry, reducing a farm's carbon footprint is imperative.
That is an interesting point. And about 3 years ago, research was done that looked at the manufacture of cheese from two different pools of milk. That said, we're going to make a set amount of cheddar cheese, and we're going to make that cheese from Jersey milk, or we're going to make that cheese from Holstein milk. And how much milk do we need? How many cows do we need to make that milk? And then what are the inputs required to support those two different populations? And at the end of the research, what they found was that the inputs required for the Jersey on a carbon footprint basis were 20% less. And we're obviously very pleased with those results. But an interesting sidelight of that research was that when they started looking at the roles that different aspects of the cow play into environmental impact, what it boiled down to is there are three primary characteristics that impact the environmental issues of a dairy cow at the farm level. One of those is body size. Another is production per cow, and the third is component level in the milk. And even though, you know, the Jersey has an advantage right now, which we're proud of, the important thing is that both breeds need to improve from this point forward. And essentially what that research outlined was that in order for the Holstein cow to reduce her carbon footprint, they needed to maintain their current production. They need to improve their components in the milk, and they need to reduce their body size. Whereas on the Jersey side, what we need to do is we need to maintain our body size. We need to maintain our component levels or even increase them, but we need to increase our production per cow. So it was very interesting as, not only a point-in-time comparison, but that research also provided a roadmap forward. And how the two breeds have different roadmaps forward in order to improve our sustainability and lessen our carbon footprint in the years to come.
The Jersey also seems to have gained a strong foothold in the niche market of smaller pasture farms that sell their milk to consumers directly off the farm. Amy Marcoot and her sister Beth run Marcoot Jersey Creamery outside of Greenville, which has been built upon their pasture operation of Jersey cattle.
I'm actually the seventh generation of Marcoots to have Jersey cows. My dad said about 7 or 8 years ago that he was going to probably sell the animals. My sister and I came back to the farm and we built a creamery in order to try to maximize dollars to basically sustain our small family dairy farm.
Marcoot said that the consumer demand for farm products people can put a family face to is what has allowed her operation to be successful.
The farmstead artisan movement is definitely making a presence in America, so that's something that people are really interested in. I think, honestly, after the recession, people started to realize that if they put money into their local economy, they would be able to support, give more jobs, and people started to become more interested about where their food came from. And even though it was a difficult time for us to do this, it was also a really smart time because that movement was happening where people became really interested in getting food from a source that they could trust and know.
The Jersey cow is popular on farms like the Marcoots for a few reasons, Eric Metzger explains.
Well, Jerseys do make excellent grazers, and that can help reduce feed costs for producers that live in parts of the country where grazing is an option. Given the smaller body size, there's less soil compaction. They tend to have fewer feet and leg complications, so walking and to do the grazing is less troublesome for them. In addition, given the niche marketing for folks that want to niche market fluid milk, the Jersey milk with its higher protein has a better, richer flavor to it, and consumers find that to be attractive when that milk can be segregated and handled separately. In addition, producers who have decided to niche market artisan cheese have found that, again, like any other cheese manufacturer, the added yield from that Jersey milk is very attractive, as a given amount of milk put through their on-farm cheese plant will yield more product in the end, which contributes to the efficiencies of their cheese plant operation.
Another attestment to Jersey popularity is the growth in Jersey semen sales.
In recent years, Jersey semen sales through the AI companies has been trending up. I believe the most recent year for which we have figures, Jersey semen sales accounted for over 13% of total semen sold in the United States. So obviously, as Jersey semen sales go up, the Jersey population is going to increase as well.
Despite the growth, that is still just 13% of all dairy semen sales. John Meyer says for the future, he does not expect the Holstein to be dethroned as the most popular breed, but rather expects her to increase even more so in popularity.
When you look at the needs for not only feeding America and the world now, but in the future, you really look at the efficiency and the feed conversion abilities of the Holstein cow and the things that she has. I think it really bodes very, very well because obviously it takes more Jersey cows to produce the same amount of milk as it does Holsteins. The other thing is, you talk about the future and trends. Genomic testing of dairy cattle is very popular now, and it's really, really going to expand more. And there's more genomic testing of Holstein dairy cattle in the United States going on today than there is anywhere in the world. So those genetic improvements and genetic jumps that are going to allow the cow to produce more high-quality milk are going to just really, really continue to catapult the Holstein breed further ahead of other breeds, we believe. We think that the distance between breeds will even be greater in the future than it is now.
Only time will tell if Meyer is accurate in his prediction as to the fate of the dairy industry. For further information on the breeds of cattle mentioned in this program, you can visit the following websites: usguernsey.com, holsteinusa.com, and usjersey.com. For more information on the main dairy breeds not on this program, you can visit usayrshire.com, brownswissusa.com, and milkingshorthorn.com. That's all for this morning's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.